Hello, podcasting friends, and welcome to episode 137 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. In today's podcast, we are going to be talking about zero-click Google searches, on SERP SEO, and how you as a business can benefit from the landscape that Google has rapidly been changing, but there's still tons of opportunity for businesses to take advantage of all of these changes. So let's dive right into the podcast. And please don't forget, we would love if you would subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to episode 137, everybody. We were just struggling a little bit with our StreamYard scheduled live feature here. But now we can do a second take because we talked for about a minute. Welcome to episode 137 of Live at the Hive. I'm Dan Adelko.
I'm Stacey DeSantis.
Matt Stefanich, producer Matt.
Producer, not producer Matt, with his
last week, producer Matt. This week, not producer Matt.
That's right. That's right. And that's all good. That's all good. Mm-hmm. Teamwork makes the dream work. Yes. Yes. Welcome, everybody. Today, we are talking about a bit of a hot button topic across the world of digital marketing. Mm-hmm. What is known as the zero click search on Google. Mm-hmm. On SERP SEO, which we will explain a little bit about what that is. Mm-hmm. And a lot about Google's dominance and how Google has shifted from becoming a search engine and being a search engine to actually owning a substantial number of competing products that will likely compete with both you, potentially your company, potentially your product, in a lot of ways. These are really, really important topics because this affects everybody from local brick and mortar businesses to huge online SaaS products as well. And so we really wanted to kind of do a deep dive into this, give you some background, give you a little bit of knowledge in terms of where it was going, and then how you can find opportunities in what is a fairly challenging environment. We're going to kind of get into that.
Yeah, all is not lost.
Yeah, that's so true.
It is far from lost. Whoa, let's see here. I'm getting a weird anybody in the audience there, let me know. Are you getting a weird stream? Is that just me?
Let me check mine.
Yeah. It might just be me.
That's very weird.
Hello, I'll April. Really hello, Hannah. Hello, Matei. Is that just
hey guys?
Is that just me, you guys?
Or is it?
Yeah, it's showing fine for me.
Okay. Hey, I'm all good with that. I'm all good with that. All right. Yeah, there we go. We're good. Okay. Yeah. Thomas is saying negative. Nope, it's good. Okay, good.
Excellent.
It's back now. See? There we go. We'd be good.
As I said, all is not lost.
Absolutely. All is never lost with us on these lives, that's for sure. Okay, so why don't we just dive into a couple of definitions and I'll kick it over to Matt and Stacey. Let's just explain a little bit about first, what is a zero-click search?
Sure. Well, it's basically when you search for something and a rich snippet will pop up, whether your example there, you have the weather, and that actually shows before Google actually present that before you actually see the first search result on the page. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's some argument that they're doing this because as voice search becomes more popular, it's going to be an easy way for people to get information, especially mobile first, if you're like looking for directions and such, but it's all that good stuff that you see before that first search result.
Yeah. Okay, so the zero-click search really also does, just to add a bit of color to that, is when the information is presented on the screen, and weather is a great example, but like even if you did something like NFL schedule, for example, this is a zero-click search right here. I can see the data. I don't need to actually go visit the NFL's website, right?
Yeah.
Can see here, even in the expanded results, I'm not at NFL's website for the schedule here. So these are called zero-click searches. They're a really huge deal. And they're a huge deal for companies big and small. So the question is when Google is aggregating the data and displaying it in such a way that the users don't need to leave, where does that leave a business, right? What do you do? And the numbers are pretty staggering. There's a really good article. We do have to qualify this. Very nice guy, Rand Fishkin. Very thoughtful in general. He did an analysis, right, in 2019, late 2019 on this, using a product called JumpShot. And we should just qualify that this was a product by Avast, the virus. They make a series of tools. Anyhow, millions and millions of users' data was completely sold to a lot of companies via JumpShot. They then surreptitiously shut down.
Yeah.
But I guess on the bright side, the data was used here in some interesting ways to talk about what happened and how users are interacting. And really one of the big stats is 34% of all searches are zero-click searches, and that number is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can see a few examples here. Another zero-click search potentially here would be obviously your map packs for local news, weather, information, and the knowledge panel. So some of these things, you know, in terms of zero click, there are ways to combat this. There are ways that you can still put your brand up in front. And one of the things is called on-SERP SEO.
Yeah. And on-SERP SEO is basically trying to take up as much as that kind of on-screen real estate on Google as much as possible, and structuring your content on your website, on your whether that's a e-commerce website or just like a homepage on your website, just structuring that data to try and tell Google, look, here's all this data, here's all this kind of congregated information. Show this to people first and take up as much screen. So that's your rich snippets, that's your map packs, that could even be reviews even, right? And it all incorporates into even your Google My Business account as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. And a couple of things. So yeah, on SERP SEO means what our goal is to understanding that, you know, a significant number, a third to a half, depending on where you get your numbers from, of those people will never click through, right? Based on your but using some of these tools, you're effectively trying to design the search engine results page. And I'll just show you a couple of quick examples here to make it make sense. So this is called Browser Stack. One of the first things to kind of talk about, and hello, Ben Miller, don't apologize for being late. He was watching Hamilton. Well, there you go.
Matea's downstairs. I'm going to let him know, Ben.
I heard Hamilton is good. I don't have definitive proof of that, but I heard it's good. So we shall see. I'll probably watch it this weekend too. Right. So here we are. If you look at, you're effectively trying to use features and tools of Google's and your own website. And we'll talk a little bit. Matt mentioned, rightly mentioned, structure of rich snippets, structured data. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that and how you can use it. But you can see here that even on my humble little search engine result page, right, my YouTube comes up. I've done a little bit of work on kind of trying to craft and design that so that I get some good results there. And I'll show you a couple of others, podcast listings and images. Right. So when you're designing, when you're doing on SERP SEO, you're admitting that, hey, OK, we're going to have a certain class and number of users that won't click through. But how do we increase our brand for these various terms? And how can we capture that traffic without just getting lost?
Exactly. And further to that, I saw a really good reference that brands should consider on SERP SEO almost like their homepage versus their website being the homepage. Like they have to work in tandem. It has to be a collaborative effort. But like if you really want to get those clicks, you got to really invest in making sure that you've optimized that accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you take up multiple spots on that screen real estate, like you said, Stacey, that just equals a higher chance for a click. I mean, you're giving people information that they want, but at the same time, You're giving them a chance to click on that resource and gain more knowledge than just a few sentences that maybe you gain on one of the rich snippets or one of the featured, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And just in order to go into this a little bit and to make sure everybody is clear on what structured data is, the web itself consists of what we would call unstructured data. That's HTML. Mm-hmm. That's what Google's kind of sole goal was, to figure out what's on this internet thing where people just use the structured data that doesn't have any context behind it in HTML, right? There's no structure. Yep. And replacing that with a structure that gives it a context so it's able to be parsed and displayed. Mm-hmm. This is an example of structured data. There's structure to this. We won't dig into code, but this is one example. Weather is another example. And these can be added to your website or to your Shopify store, to WordPress. There are various plugins that will help you do it if you're not technically inclined, or if you have a web developer, they can help you. But the structured data is literally the future of the web. Okay. Sure. And if I do, you know, recipe, this here is a structured data snippet for recipes. You can see they have very much a different format than everything else. There are tons of different types of structured data. There's recipes, there's people, there's organizations, there's articles, weather. It's a very long list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But overall, I mean, it's a better user experience, because if you're a user, you just want to find the information you're looking for right away. And if it's all structured neatly in front of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the analogy that you use, Stacey, where this is sort of like, this is almost like your homepage. You know what I mean? Or is it giving you the information that you're looking for right at your face without, I mean, having to click? I mean, that's a positive thing for a user experience. But at the same time, you're still wanting people to click these links if you're, say, the Taste of Home, or you're the Wholesome Club, or Once Upon a Chef, right? Mm-hmm. So you still want to get those clicks, but if people are getting the information they need from your rich snippets, I mean, it's a great user experience as well.
Absolutely. And one thing I like to say about structured data, and again, this doesn't need to be get super technical here, but structured data is the way they would have designed the web 30 years ago if they knew what was going to happen with the web. But literally nobody really knew the extent or the impact of it. And now this stuff is all coming to bear.
Yeah.
Here's another example of structured data here. If I search for buy laptop. Now, this is a really good example of potential zero-click searches and also position zero. So here I am. I want to buy a laptop. And there you go. You've got Staples, Microsoft, and PC Canada buying ads from Google. Then you've got Google Shopping over here, which is a behemoth. Then you've got your local map pack. And when you get down here, you get to poor little organic search result number one.
Exactly. It used to be too, like your goal was to get to that number one spot, but that number one spot was above the fold, not below it. So
So, you know, these things do, this is just the world that we live in. And this is the world that as businesses and marketers, we have to figure out, okay, so how do we deal with this? How do we take advantage? Because Google, and also, I think just one other thing to preface this with here is, well, here's a good example. So this is the paid and organic zero-click searches in Google. You can see in this particular report, 45% of searches resulted in an organic click, and 50.33% resulted in zero-click searches.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's... I'm not surprised by that by any means. I think that, look, I think when people, especially the demographic that grew up using Google, Google's platform, when people see two or three ads at the very top, they know that it's not a result of their search, right? Someone's paid to have that thing there. So I mean, I think that still organic is still extremely important in terms of your positioning. People are still most likely to click on the top organic result. But at the same time, if you have a good positioning on the organic rating for your search keywords, mm-hmm. maybe try and, you know, get a few rich snippets in there so that people get some on SERP clicks, right? So,
well, that's it. And I think that's what we're going to dig into here. And you can mm-hmm. see, you can see how different, so some of the strategies we're going to talk about, sorry, just to backtrack, is, okay, this is the zero click, zero position world we're living in. Google dominates. Mm-hmm. Google also is no longer a search engine. They are typically a competitor or one of the people in the competition.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I think they want to be known as an answer engine now, but
yeah, it's tough. Let's look, let's have a look. I think people forget. I think it's easy to forget, but let's just have a look at some of these things that Google actually does compete with a very large in very large spaces, fairly quietly. So Google has their own career building job board site. They've had it for quite some time. It's called Google Jobs. Mm-hmm. It would compete directly with, you know, Monster and any of the other hundreds of job boards that exist out there. The challenge with this is that, and I'll show you here. So this is what, if I'm doing a job search, Google owns the search engine. Google also owns the jobs platform. Therefore, Google does not have to do any SEO to get this here. They just put it there. Yep. It's their search engine. Yeah, it's their product. They're putting their own product in a preferential position.
Yeah.
Right?
Same with YouTube videos, right? Like,
yep, that's another.
YouTube's like the second major search engine, which they own. And like, I was looking at different things and how to make pizza dough with one search I did, and YouTube videos all across the top.
Yeah, for sure. And Google quite typically will, they used to index a lot of Vimeo and a bunch of different things. But overwhelmingly, you get YouTube. Now this is a good example here. You see YouTube. Yeah. So again, another example of how Google both owns the engine and the product. The product is now your video, right? Mm-hmm. So where did you host your video? We're going to talk a little bit about how you can host your video on YouTube and actually use structured data for video to get what Swim University has right here. And we've got some other examples of it.
Exactly.
It's coming from their website. It is a YouTube video embedded on their website, but that's... Mm-hmm. One of the only ways to really get into the video search, because the video search is fairly much completely dominated by YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. I don't see any Vimeo. I'm sure there's some great Vimeo.
Maybe. I'm sure. Yeah. You know, that should
potentially, but they don't. Right.
Yeah.
So there we go. There we go. April saying, I mean, I guess Google can do what they want. This is true. They can. It's a private company. they do have that freedom to do what they want. There's probably other questions about, you know, monopolistic practices, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't...
It's a total pay-to-play model, right? Because, look, I'm losing my ear thing here. Because when you think about it, when you're doing your Google advertising, you're going to show up above the fold. But let's say you have all these YouTube videos and someone clicks on that YouTube video. Now another ad is served before the video plays. Like, it just goes on and on and on and on.
And I think that it's also a bit of a losing battle too. If your business is in the same space as maybe like a Google competitor or a Google service that you're competing with. So whether it be, you know, you know, travel, jobs, anything, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in the same space that's competing with a Google platform, I think it's going to be almost like, I mean, you can give Google as much money as you want, but I don't think Google's going to put, you know, like Expedia above their travel searches, right? So,
yeah. So, you know, there's quite a few. Here's another example, just by the way, about another, this is called a featured snippet. Featured snippets are automatically generated by Google, but this is an excellent example of it. And Hayward Pool got the top position here. This is another tactic, and we're gonna dive into this. Mm-hmm. But this is just another example of this. Okay, so just to kind of keep plowing through this here. So Google also has Google Hotels. And Google Hotels is a complete booking engine where Google will, you know, make a You can make a reservation via Google. They'll get their commissions, very much Expedia's model. So if I go here, I do like Toronto hotels, and look who's there, right? So this has forced the hand of, say, Trivago's and Booking.com into this position of paying Google to be here and also owning the search platform and booking platform for this. I don't want to dwell on this too much. I just want to give examples to illustrate that Google is much more than a search engine. They own every type of booking engine. One of the biggest ones here is Google Flights. So a number of years ago, Google bought a small software company called ITA Software, and ITA is the booking engine for the flight industry. Yeah. And then they own the source of the data for all of this, and then they release Google Flights as well. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, these companies on their own would be probably substantially sized businesses by themselves before anything else. So that just gives you hopefully a little bit of context around, you know, what Rand Fishkin, for example, is talking about here, from everyone's search engine to everyone's competitor. And I don't think it's an understatement to say everyone. Google's services and products reach very deeply into so many different areas. This is a great resource you can go, and we're not going to obviously get through 87 slides here.
What was I going to say, though? All is not lost, though. We have some ideas on ways you can, you know, optimize or actually use Google to your advantage and get found.
Absolutely. Well, it is, right? And that's what the OnSERP SEO is. And I think in some areas it's easier, in some areas it's a little bit more challenging. All of it will require effort and a kind of continuous kind of focus on this. So what can we do? Right? What are some of the things that we can do as business owners? And you know, maybe not the biggest budgets in the world, but what can we do in terms of how we can optimize both our website content and presence on Google. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Nope. You go ahead,
Steve. I was just going to say, like, probably number one is use the tools that Google has provided. Use Google My Business. Use, you know, all these tools that you can optimize. Like, it's the best form of advertising without paying for advertising. Yeah. It's free to play, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, like, and then I believe if you do use those tools, Google will improve your ranking, right?
So absolutely, yeah.
Or do I have that right?
No, for sure. Yeah, I think what people also get confused with too is, like, you post one piece of content, and we say this over and over again, but post one piece of content and you expect Google to show that piece of content, right? But what happens if you take that one video that you're trying to get shown and you create a blog post about that video, you transcribe it and add it to another piece to your site? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're expanding that content. You're making it see, like, across the board, right? So Google will be like, whoa, this is really important. This must be the, you know what I mean? So
yeah, you have those rich snippets.
Bringing it to the forward. Yeah.
You have YouTube videos, you have Google My Business. Goes on and on, right?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the first things that you can do is, one, yes, absolutely use Google's tools. You're forced into a bit there, but there are some really fantastic tools as well. On the flip side, YouTube is a great platform, right? Mm-hmm. Google My Business, we've talked a lot about it, is a very powerful, absolutely free platform that costs you nothing. This is pulling up Austin marketing agencies, but here, because this is, I'm getting like a data center out of Texas for this. But what you can see here is the power of Google My Business is really displayed here. And I've got some screenshots I can probably pull up. That you get number one positioning. Like, if I was in Austin, let's see. Let me just get rid of Waterloo there. See if I can do that. Oops. Okay. let me just do a marketing agency and see what comes up in the Austin, Texas area.
Yep.
And you can see here. Okay. So if I was in the Texas area, I would definitely be optimizing my marketing agency.
Oh, 100%.
Which is a little bit of a lot of irony for the old Texas market. But Google My Business is the gateway into the yellow pages of the 21st century. When people are mobile for your business, they can call directly from the search.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's step number one. Within Google My Business, let's talk about some of the features that would really make a big difference.
Well, your location, mm-hmm. your reviews, people yeah. can see right away.
Your photos.
Yeah. If you're putting some a post there that directly link back to your website that show direct value.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else?
Physical address as yeah, well, right?
Exactly.
Oh,
and
website, you yeah. know, the list goes on, right?
Yeah, so there's a few things here, and I'll just pull up our Google My Business. This is step one. Oops. There we go.
Hours, yeah.
Well, obviously, some of the basic hours. Now, you can also book appointments. If you connect a CRM, you can allow people to book appointments directly from your Google My Business listing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You can ask and answer questions. So if you have common queries that people are asking you about all the time, then you can set up questions and answers for people so that, again, mm-hmm. your zero-click search can be mitigated by the fact that you put the information in the search result using Google's tools,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So that's a very important part of it. Obviously, your reviews are super important, but you can see here as well is, and these show up completely differently on desktop versus mobile. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about one thing very, very quickly here. Google is a mobile first search engine. Okay.
Yes.
You don't believe me? Google has said.
Just think about your own search patterns. Like when are you searching?
So one of the things about mobile first indexing and best practices is basically what Google said in 2019 was, the most important index that we have is the mobile index. Then comes the desktop index, and there's two separate, completely separate things. Mm-hmm. So again, there's a whole bunch of best practices on this link in this reference documentation. For all practical purposes, what you need to know is that mobile first is what you need to be concerned with. The desktop yeah. will follow, but it's secondary to the mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. So with Google My Business, I lost it. There we go. Again, you connect your social profiles. And again, this is like a free brand advertising area for you to use. People can send directions to their phone, right, to find you. You've got the posts here. And it's a really nice display. The stronger that you use, the more you use Google My Business and its full set of features, the better you're going to be able to, you will rank higher in those map packs. They all kind of work together for mm-hmm. different types of terms. I'm just using Honeypot Marketing here as an example.
And Google's mm-hmm. smart, right? Like they know the best entry into adoption is a free service.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, you just have to think along those lines. Like Google might be kind of becoming like a walled garden, but there are ways that you can plant flowers in that garden, make them grow too, right?
There so, you go. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Leave it to me to have an analogy or something.
Okay, so Google My Business is step number one. And actually, we saw it over here too. Let me just show that. There's in the comments there, you'll see that we've got a link to the mobile first indexing mm-hmm. best practices directly from Google. Mm-hmm. Then one of the next things that you can do is your good friend Twitter.
Hmm.
Okay.
So true. Yeah.
So here you go. You can see that the size of the Twitter structure data snippet right here is disproportionately large.
Yeah. And I think it has to do with the character count, right? They don't cut off the tweets at all. It's the full tweet, right?
Yep. And again, so if you're looking at, okay, so you know, how do I compete in this world where there are all these different formats, right? We've shown a whole bunch of them. Well, one of them is to put some effort into your Twitter account. Make sure we've got a whole list of tips. Let's see here.
Real hashtags, right?
Relevant hashtags, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you can link those with your keywords. So if you know that keywords are really ranking well with your content, then you can use those same keywords as hashtags in your tweet.
Mm-hmm. And be consistent with your hashtags. Don't just randomly toss out hashtags.
Yeah.
Like you're vomiting hashtags. That's not a great one.
Yeah, you have to have a strategy behind it for sure.
Yeah, be consistent. Be consistent with your posting. It doesn't mean you need to be CNN. You're not posting out, you know, 50 times a day. Just be consistent. That's very important. Mm-hmm. Another tip is your images have to be 1024 by 512 or the native Twitter size that they recommend. If you can do more things for Google to help Google understand the link between your Twitter account, your YouTube account, your website, your Google My Business, strongly interconnect those things, then you'll get these kind of really nice branded displays of your brand. And you also get other terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other one as well, add your Twitter feeds to your website. There are several different services that will allow you to do this. And using your own hashtags, create dedicated streams of topics, and you can then filter those in various areas.
Yes. Yeah. Lists are great. And consistency. You don't want to just like post once a month, you know, Twitter's not a platform where you can just tweet and bounce. Like you gotta stay in the conversation.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And a lot of content that you post on Google as well in those rich snippets, it will actually tell you when it was last updated, right? So say if you have a guide or a recipe or something like that, right? And you update it frequently, it will tell the people who search for that keyword or for that guide that, hey, this was updated maybe 14 hours ago. And someone will be like, holy crap, 14 hours ago? Yeah, I'm going for this, right? Because people try and search for relevance, right? And timeliness, right? If I'm looking for a guide, I'm not going to look for a guide that's like 5 years old, right? I'm going to look for something that's new, something that has brand new ideas and fresh content, right?
Yeah, you have to invest in your content, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is in fact actually one of the most important things. I think people really do get stuck, especially content marketers. You know, I got to churn out new content. Another strategy that you can do, it's very easy to do, is go back in your analytics, which is Google Analytics or whatever you're using. Go back for the last year to 2 years and find your best ranking content and then update. If you wrote a guide in 2017, update it for 2020, put 2020 in the title, and you will build that authority up. So you don't have to just kind of constantly be churning out brand new content. That's hard, right?
Because like 9 times out of 10, you're sitting on a wealth of evergreen content that just needs a slight update. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can take it and repurpose it. You know, another strategy for this whole thing too is to really make sure that you invest in your longer form content so you can take that stuff and you can maybe make a video series out of it. You can make a podcast. And by doing that, you're producing content where people are coming to find you directly versus even having to search, right?
Yeah.
So you're building that up.
And even structuring your written content too. I mean, a lot of times we see walls and walls of a blog post, right? Without a table of contents or anything like that.
Nothing.
If you have long form content, include that table of contents, because then you can update just specific features or chapters of that blog, right? And it's super easy.
Yep, 100%. Really, and again, if you've got older content that you're going back, remember Google Mobile First Index.
Yeah.
People are by and large, not exclusively, it depends on your market, but when you're designing your content, just like a web designer would design something or a graphic designer, if you're a content creator, design your content for mobility. Understand how people use that content.
Yeah.
So let's just keep going here because I don't want to run out of time. The next strategy you can use here is good old YouTube. Now, there's a lot. Let me just do this here. Throw it on the screen here. So this is an example of a personal business CEO brand that we've optimized. And one of the strategies on this is to say, okay, if we're looking at the mobile side of things, we've got a ton of video and we want that video to display as prominently as we can on multiple locations using YouTube as the kind of canonical source of that information. Mm-hmm. But as you can see here on the screen, hopefully you can see it. I don't think I can make it much bigger. As you can see on the screen here, these are YouTube videos, but these are embedded on websites. The websites are the things that are ranking here for various different videos. Just thought this was kind of a cool example of how you can use structured data. Now, inside of that structured data, and again, WordPress, tons of plugins. I like Schema Pro 2.0 by Brainstormforce. It's very good. That's what's delivering some of these. But you can see that these are using the structured data for video on the website, pointing to a Google embed. So let's just have a look at how, and again, if you're working on your professional brand, you're a C-level executive, whatever, this is a really good strategy here. So you can see video, just play. And again, these are YouTube videos embedded on various different websites. Then what we did as well, so you can also see here, we had structured data, the FAQ structured data. And I'm pretty sure when I recorded this, I'll come back and open up those things there. Oh, no, there they go. So this is the FAQ structured data. So you can see, again, these are all zero-click searches. We're just letting Google, we're saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to fight it. But if I can optimize for the FAQ structured data snippet, then I'm winning because I'm taking it over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the key.
Yeah. I just thought this was a nice example of illustrating an optimized on SERP optimization.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the YouTube channel, which has a very nice carousel. And again, so I think that's the third location on this SERP with that's video rich, right?
Yep.
So out of the 10 positions, we own three of them all with video. Enable. Mm-hmm. Then you can see here, look at the size of Twitter. I mean, Google and Twitter get a lot. it is honestly freakishly large. It's just a thing, but it is what it is.
No.
Hey, if that's yours, I don't think you're going to be complaining that it's so large. You know what I mean?
For sure. And again, that's why you need to care about these things and have a consistent message, voice, tone, and brand.
Yeah. Right? Well, and YouTube puts these tools there for a reason, you know? So you might have a ton of YouTube content already that you've already posted, but that doesn't mean you can't go back and optimize your titles, your descriptions, your hashtags or your keywords. And you can use tools like TubeBuddy that can help you optimize all those things. There might be keywords that you haven't even thought of that you could rank for. So yeah.
Yep, 100%. And here's a few tips just for the YouTube side. Also keep in mind that this is a David and Goliath thing. And again, huge opportunity. So if you've got a small brand and a small business, even like we do, like how would honeypotmarketing.com compete in some really competitive spaces? Well, youtube.com does have a substantial amount of authority, probably more than most websites do on the internet. Because if you properly optimize a YouTube channel, you can rank, and you saw some of the examples we just showed with Frank's personal brand, you can take advantage of the authority of that website to help leapfrog into much more competitive spaces.
For sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's a few things you can do with YouTube. Again, I know it sounds repetitive, but consistency is key.
Yeah, for sure.
definitely do not... It's the start stop mentality of marketers, right? I'm going to campaign and then I'm going to stop and campaign and I'm going to stop, and it's much more of a marathon. The other thing you want to do is update titles and descriptions, front loading the terms that are relevant to your business and related to your business. Don't keyword stuff it, but you can certainly go a long way to doing that, and use those descriptions. Those are the lifeblood. Titles and descriptions and tags are the lifeblood of YouTube.
For sure. Yeah.
Here's another one. When you upload, and I didn't put it in the notes that I made today, if your video producer is exporting data. There's always, in every video editor, even iMovie, metadata, which is information about information, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a meta title tag, we have a meta description mm-hmm. tag, we have all these different meta tags. Well, videos have those too. And if you fill them out, Google can read those and they'll understand them. So it's a simple way. And it's literally a series of boxes inside of your video editor that are, you know, title, description, publication date. They have a whole bunch of fields. Fill those in when you're exporting your video.
Yeah.
Use video thumbnails and make them high quality and consistent.
Yeah.
Right.
You can, they make it easy enough for you to embed it into your website. So create a sitemap mm-hmm. with all your video content on your site, you know?
Yep, for sure. Like I said, add a video sitemap.xml file and use that structured data like we showed you. That's going to give you those nice results that we just were showing you, and allow Google to display the metadata and the video in context with your website. And that's what you want here, right? Like mm-hmm. our whole goal here is to understand we live in a zero click world. So on SERP SEO is very important. Using that page, like Stacy mentioned, it's part of your brand, right?
Yeah.
For your brand terms, you can also win in dozens of other ways with these search with Google. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Then lastly, create focused topical playlists. If you can structure them in such a way, you can have quite a few different playlists that are convenient. You can then display each playlist on your website in a specific location, increasing the number of embeds that you've got on your site, which Google will like.
Yeah. Right? How powerful is that? Like if you had like a restaurant and you wanted to post a bunch of videos of dishes being prepped on one page, or you wanted to display the history yeah. of your business on the other, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's endless. You can have a vegan playlist to appeal to people that are interested in vegan foods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we've got like April, we've talked about this, gluten-free, right?
Mm-hmm.
and if the more that you build it out, I guess the point is people say, well, we have a YouTube channel. Yeah, great.
Okay.
By creating those topical playlists, yeah, okay, who cares? By creating the topical playlists and putting them throughout your site and then using the sitemap.xml
yeah.
and using the structured data for the video object throughout your site, you've exponentially increase the number of opportunities you have to be indexed for those various terms and have your videos displayed for other terms like vegan restaurants near me, right? Yeah. Because if they can make that connection, if Google can make that connection, you will show up for those very, very valuable local searches.
Absolutely.
Right. Cool. All right. So more stuff. What else can we do here?
What do we got?
Let's keep going here. So we talked about optimizing for Google My Business. We talked about optimizing for your Twitter. We talked about optimizing for YouTube and then bringing that stuff into your website. Again, all with the sole goal or the final goal of on SERP SEO, because we live in a zero click world. Google is a monster. They're not going to change. So you can either adapt or just, you know, roll over and die if you have a business, which you don't really want.
Very morbid on a Friday.
It's kind of dark, but it's true.
It's a little dark.
I think one thing we maybe haven't touched upon is, you know, understanding which rich snippets might be best for your business. We were talking about this earlier about like pull a ranking report for relevant keywords, mm-hmm. and then filtering those keywords.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. let's just talk a little bit about that. I made a whole bunch of notes today. I typed for like an hour here. I don't know why. I basically wrote a bunch of blog posts.
Basically, yeah.
The content team was loving you.
job done. Okay, here we go. Right. So one of the most important things, obviously we talked about it, in terms of how, okay, so, you know, there's a lot of featured snippets, there's a lot of structured data out there. Which ones should work for you?
Yeah.
And what should you go for? I can tell you right now, one of the best ones you can do are the FAQ snippet. Okay. We'll get into also for your own business, which would be somewhat separate, because there's a lot of different structured data, but the FAQ is a winner all the time. Fighting for the featured snippet. Okay. So the FAQ, I'll flip over to this one. This is what this one looks like. And again, you don't need to be super technical to understand how this stuff works. You could never have any experience with SEO in order to kind of, you know, put these things in place for your business. This here, the featured snippet is Google generated, but there are some known things that you can do that Google likes to help encourage it. Okay. So that's another one to think of. Okay. But what is the process? So there is a tool, a few, there's hundreds of them. SEMrush. Basically what you want to find is a tool that will allow you to do a little bit of keyword research for your brand and for your terms. But what you want to have is that the keyword tool that you're using tells you if there are featured snippets and structured data in those results already. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there are lots that will do it. Let me just see here. Just run a quick keyword overview here. Okay. SEMrush is one tool that will give you search results and ranking results, and it will actually tell you if there is structured data on that search result. Okay. So here's a quick way. A quick way is to use Google Suggest. So let's say you're a total noob and you've never done this before. Well, just go to Google. Type in the terms that you're most interested in, right? That apply to your business. Okay. So I'll do something like vegan restaurants. Let me just flip back over here.
Dan, are you turning vegan on us?
No.
Just teasing.
Fun fact, I was actually vegan.
What?
Good for you.
Oh, good for you.
Way too long ago for me to even admit how many years ago it was. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So it's just, I don't know why, it just popped into my head. So vegan restaurants in Cambridge, if I scroll down to the bottom, you see Google's telling you what's related.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can just keep, you just do this 6 or 7 times and in 5 minutes, you'll have 100 keywords.
Yeah. Yep. It's that people also asked or, you know, need more questions sometimes too.
This is
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Literally Google's actually very transparent about things. You don't even need a tool to do this. Mm-hmm. This is called a seed keyword and then what's called stemming and how Google and you know the happy cow for example is probably doing something right there because they are considered a stem of vegan restaurants in Cambridge.
Good job.
So they must think that they've got some relevance there. Then you can take those keywords, plug them in. Now that they're not the only one. But you can get SEMrush, Screaming Frog, Ahrefs, keywordtool.io, Neil Patel's Uber Suggest also does it, I believe. And that will tell you if there's rich snippets in those results. If there isn't a rich snippet in those results, make that list, then go create those rich snippets structured data focused on those results. And that's just, it's like I said, I think I used to do a series a long time ago as well about the black magic of SEO. Somebody in marketing at a company I once worked at when I did a lot of speaking on a circuit titled, put my name of the black magic of SEO behind me on like a 50-foot TV wall projector thing. And so I walked out and I kind of looked at it and I said, well, there is no black magic. So I had to turn that around.
Ah.
Well, very practical. There is no black magic to it. It's all super practical stuff that you do from almost a developer standpoint and content standpoint to rank. Wow. That was
learn new things about every day, Dan.
Oh. Yep.
No black magic.
No black magic. There is none. Yes, and then so when you get that list of the snippets, your high potential for winning the featured snippet, for winning the FAQ snippet, I just want to run down because we're a little over time and I know we've had a weird split week, so I'm sure everybody wants to get out onto a patio or something if they can. very safely, socially distancing. Here's just a few more things to help when you're on SERP SEO, okay? And again, we're focused here on the 50-ish percent of people that are zero-click searches. Win definitions and explanations. Answer questions, right? Answer the public, right?
Yeah.
That's a search engine, a question-based search engine. Create. Okay. By answering those questions and putting them up on your website and adding the FAQ snippet, you've got a really great opportunity to show up in very prominent locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's a zero-click search because the question and the answer are clearly displayed there. Win the image. Use Google's image search. Optimize all of your images. Name them. Don't name them image underscore one.
No, don't, please.
Or else I will lose my mind. Name your image. It's such a basic thing, but name your image and add alt, caption, description, all of those elements to it as well. Also with images, if you want to get into it, you can do metadata onto images and ID3 tags. And also, coolly, you can add location information to images. So if you have a lat long of a restaurant or a local business, add that in. Just talk to whoever's doing your design work and get them to add that in. That's all available stuff. Helps Google. Mm-hmm. So you want to win that image, right? And then winning lists and tables. Matt, you talked about this a little earlier. Tables of contents, highly structured, nicely organized, so Google understands, and that's a big part of the featured snippet as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't even get
through like 50% of this topic.
It's a lot to get through.
It's a big topic, yeah. Right? And there's a lot of ways mm-hmm. to look at it. So yeah.
It is, and I think it's important for businesses to understand, like. I spend most of my life with my head buried in this stuff and following this stuff. I think the important thing is to understand that Google's not going to change. They're proceeding down a course of action from a business perspective,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And something as marketers we do really well is we pivot and we have to remain fluid, right? We have to adapt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think adapting with Google and then using the tools that Google provides can actually give you an upper hand in this battle against your competition. You've got huge opportunities that like 25 years ago did not exist.
Yeah.
Right. And if you've got budget, these are the places I would be putting that budget into is, you know, give a budget for your content, give a budget to an SEO program, put thought into this. This stuff is hugely powerful for your business. And, you know, even things like, for example, you know,